Chapter 18, The Fight for Freedom. November 8th, Mirth. Narayana grunted as she landed on her back, but quickly rolled away and jumped up. She was better than this guy and was not about to lose this fight. Lucriana, her Mirth host, had been getting into scraps her entire life, and both she and Nancy always fought to win. She brought her fists up just in time to block a jab-cross combination and stepped back to avoid the kick that followed. Retreating wasn't her style, though. Narayana pushed back into the fight, throwing numerous combinations which were all blocked. This guy was a good fighter. Her extensive set of combinations set up a pattern and a tempo which he matched with his blocks and parries. Narayana began another run of her routine, but this time she checked her jab and stepped into a front kick with all her strength. He had been lulled into the rhythm and was late on his block. Her foot landed in his solar plexus, and he crumpled to the ground with a low moan. "Narayana, pull your punches. You're just sparring," yelled Terra. "They aren't going to be pulling their punches tomorrow, and it's not my fault Stavius can't block," Narayana replied. She was panting so hard that her retort was barely a whisper. "I'm okay," grimaced Stavius as he rose back to a fighting stance. "Perhaps, but that's enough for today. We fight first thing in the morning, and I don't want anyone stepping onto the field injured. Go sit in the magic spring for a while to recover," insisted Terra. Stavius and Narayana casually chatted while recovering in the magic spring for 20 minutes. Then Narayana became serious and changed the topic. "I'm worried about tomorrow," she admitted. "I don't see why. It's only a fight to the death with 6 big guards," laughed Stavius. Narayana elbowed him and said, "I'm serious. You know that you, Versera, and I could probably take on all 6 by ourselves, but I'm worried about the others. Janice is a terrible fighter. Terra can fight, but she's too old. She can barely spar for 3 minutes without having to rest. And have you seen how she's been limping lately? And then there is Elisa, who has refused to train with us at all. None of them are going to be any help, and I'm afraid that we'll have to defend them. There's no way we can beat 6 large men and women while protecting our friends, but I'm not going to abandon them." Stavius looked at Narayana and saw tears glistening at the corners of her eyes. She might be brash and competitive, but she cared about her friends and was always thinking of her team. Put his arm around her and said, "Just relax. We'll figure it out tomorrow. Besides, we're the prophecy heroes. The gods will have our backs." "Yeah, just like they protected all those heroes who died before us," sniveled Narayana before straightening up. "Still, we must be positive, right? Please don't tell anyone about what we just said." "Agreed," answered Stavius, but he was finding it challenging to remain upbeat. The 6 heroes walked onto the field at first light. The townspeople played a soccer-like game with a leather ball filled with lightweight, spongy wool on a large, muddy field. This seemed to be the only entertainment these people had, making the prospect of being trapped behind these walls even more terrifying. Most of the villagers seemed to be there, encircling the field as spectators. Janice was impressed with the turnout for such an early event, but Versera noted that this was probably going to be the most exciting entertainment any of the villagers had seen in years. The king and the queen arrived, followed by 6 huge guards. The travelers groaned with despair when they saw that each was heavily armored and armed. The travelers walked up to the low dais constructed for the royal family at the midfield sideline. "Excuse me, your majesty, but where are our weapons?" asked Terra. The king laughed and replied, "Weren't y'all listening? I told y'all that I ain't never arming y'all even if y'all win. I certainly ain't going to arm y'all now. Are you having second thoughts? I'll give you one last chance to withdraw and accept your life sentence." Narayana said, "Excuse us, your majesty. My friends and I need to confer." The 6 travelers huddled in the center of the field to decide their fate. "Look, guys, I don't see how we can win this one, but I'll leave it to you. We'll take a vote, but we do this as a team. If anyone votes to withdraw, then that will be our team decision," Narayana dejectively instructed. "Wait. We spent months training to fight back in the cave valley, and the last 2 weeks honing our skills," said Elisa in surprise. "Why would we give up now?" "We've been training, but you haven't been working with us, Elisa," grumbled Narayana. Then she added in a softer tone, "But
It isn't just you. Tara is injured, although she's been trying to hide it. Janice added, and I'm a liability. Hey, I know I can't fight. I'm a magician, not a fighter, and I am useless out here. Sorry, guys. Well, I guess that's it then. I'll go inform the king, said Narayana. Hey, I didn't say I was voting to quit, interrupted Janice. I'll fight if that's the team's decision. Me too, agreed Tara. Stop it, guys, shouted Alisa, and don't think I'm not ready and willing to fight just because I like to train alone. Do you guys really want to stay here for the rest of your lives? The rest of them grumbled. No, of course not. Alisa spun around without another word and strode up to the king's dais. She announced in her firmest voice, Your Majesty, we wish to continue the contest, but are concerned that this is not a fair fight and would like to request a few changes. I bet y'all are concerned, but I ain't changing nothing, laughed the king as she squeezed the queen's hand. Alisa replied with a serious expression, Please hear me out, Your Majesty. Your guards are facing the prophecy heroes and two of our friends. It would be a much fairer fight if it were just between your guards and the four prophecy heroes. Would you please allow our friends to join the townspeople on the sidelines? The king looked at the girl with surprise. I am unsure whether y'all are stupid or if you're simply trying to protect your friends. But very well, I accept your brash request. I will permit any two of y'all to watch instead of participating. Thank you, Your Majesty. Our other concern involves the weapons, said Alisa. I'm sure it does, young lady, but I already said I ain't going to arm y'all, scowled the king. Oh, I understand, Your Majesty. It's just that involving weapons increases the likelihood that we will injure one or more of your guards, answered Alisa with a smile. She was becoming more confident every second. Please don't concern yourself with that. My men's weapons will simply ensure that your deaths are as quick and painless as possible, assured the king. That is our last concern, admitted Alisa. While death would certainly define the victors, we would also like to ask that you be able to announce the victors by a decision. We would not want our trial to weaken the security of the town by killing six of your best guards. You can surely see the wisdom of this, offered Alisa. The king rose and shouted, Your silly attempts at delaying this match are over, young lady. The contest will end when I say it is over, and that will be when y'all are dead. Now prepare to meet your destiny. Alisa did a slight curtsy and walked back to her friends. Where did that come from? Asked Rosera in amazement. I always thought you were shy, agreed Stavius. Don't confuse my desire to be alone with shyness, said Alisa. She's agreed to sideline our two weakest members. Now, what's your strategy to win, Narayana? Everyone just stared at Alisa in disbelief. This was not the girl they thought they knew. Oh, and you should know that my mirth host is a very skilled fighter. She grew up in a rough part of town and fought daily to survive, added Alisa. Now, what is the plan? Those guys aren't going to wait all day. Tara and Janice wished them luck and walked to the sideline while Narayana shook the surprise out of her head. She said, Well, the strategy isn't to win, or at least that isn't our initial strategy. We'll lose if we start out trying to win. Stavius, Rosera, and Elisa's mouths dropped open in disbelief. Narayana quickly explained, We are going to do this in three phases with three separate objectives. Our first is to disarm our attackers to balance the field. Our second is to acquire their weapons to give us the advantage, and only then will we focus on winning. Understood? All four grinned and bumped fists. Narayana was a good captain. Three unarmed 13-year-old girls and a 17-year-old boy were about to battle the six best guards of the kingdom, who were heavily armed and armored, and yet they felt good. They believed they would win. The two groups faced off at the center of the field, and the heroes took a closer look at their opponents and their weaponry. There were four men and three women. Two of the men carried swords, while the rest carried large clubs. Dibs on the guys with the swords, claimed Stavius as he pulled a pair of dragonskin gloves out of a pocket. I brought a secret weapon. The new guy in gardening gets to weed iron thistle. Pulling those suckers out requires dragon skin gloves, and even then, you still get all scratched up. These gloves should work well for deflecting swords, don't you think? He grinned. Fine by me. I'll take the other two guys, agreed Narayana. Elisa said, and I'll take the two women. Rosera cried, Hey, what about me? This is so unfair. Boar spent months teaching me how to weaponize Veronica's cardio kickboxing, and I've been dreaming of giving it a real test. Okay, take my guy on the right then, relented Narayana. Just remember to disarm these guys and get their weapons before you try to beat them in a fight. Then she let loose a loud war cry, and the four heroes attacked. One of the men with swords swung at Stavius while the other held back. That was a mistake. The guard brought his sword around and down in a powerful overhead strike and fell forward in shock when Stavius caught the sword blade in midair. Stavius grabbed the sword blade with both hands and held on as it swung towards his left shoulder. He tightened his grip and yanked it from the startled guard's hands. The off-balance guard stumbled forward as Stavius swung the sword over his shoulders and onto the guard's head with all his might. The heavy hilt smashed against the guard's helm, and Stavius knew he was going to be out for the rest of the fight. The guard who had held back stood frozen with his mouth agape. Stavius flipped the sword handle into his right hand, grinned at him, and attacked. Elisa looked like a tornado as she spun and struck at the two women. Both were attacking with their clubs, but kept getting in each other's way, which enabled Elisa to land kicks and punches to their heads and bodies. It only took a minute or two before they were panting and one dropped her guard. Elisa landed a flying roundhouse kick on the side of her head, and another guard was down. Elisa recovered the fallen club, spun, and threw it in the face of the other woman. Her second guard dropped to her knees with blood spurting from her nose, and Elisa turned to help Versera. Versera was having difficulty subduing her opponent. Disarming someone wielding a club sounds like a good strategy, but it is not as simple as it sounds. The man fighting Versera was over a foot taller than her and 2 to 3 times her weight. She was struggling just to keep him from smashing her and had yet to get a chance to try her kickboxing moves. She heard Elisa shout something and turned for a quick peek after avoiding a particularly violent attack. A second later, a club was in her hand and Elisa was attacking from another angle. Thanks for the club, but no hogging. This one's mine, yelled Versera as her club smacked into the guard's and she saw him wince from the pain vibrating down his arm. Elisa smashed his left knee and he collapsed on the ground. I said no hogging, screamed Versera as she brought her club down onto his helmet. Both then heard Narayana's scream as their attacker fell to the ground and they turned to see what had happened. Narayana had been having as much difficulty disarming her opponent as Versera. She had selected General Jeremy, the king's top general, for herself. General Jeremy was not a regular guard, but rather a highly skilled and experienced fighter who was not going to fall for any of her tricks. She couldn't get the upper hand, and one of his blows had brushed her left arm. It was just a glancing blow, but the pain was almost unbearable, and her arm was now useless. Stavius heard her scream and shouted, Here, Narayana! As he tossed the sword hilt first in her direction. He had disarmed the first guard with his gloved hands anyway. Narayana rolled towards Stavius as the muddy ground she just vacated exploded from the impact of General Jeremy's club. She grabbed the sword, continued rolling, and thrust it straight upward. General Jeremy gasped and dropped his club as the sword penetrated a gap in his armor and slid through his abdomen. Narayana cried, Oh no! I'm sorry! I'm so sorry! It was an accident! I didn't mean to hurt him! Elisa and Versera rushed to her side as Stavius held up his hand and shouted, Stop the fight! Stop the fight! The king commanded, He's unarmed! Finish him! The remaining guard took one look at his dying general and fallen comrades and froze, staring at Stavius. Elisa tossed her club to Stavius as she and Janice knelt beside the fallen general. Versera and Stavius assumed a protective stance around their friends, but the remaining guard refused to move.
I can't believe I was killed by a little girl, groaned the injured general.
Narayana was holding his head in her lap and repeated, I am so sorry. She sniffled and tried to regain her composure. First, you aren't dead yet, and second, you were bested by one of the prophecy heroes. You fought with honor, sir. Then she looked at Janice and Elisa and asked, Can you save him? Not out here without magic, sighed Elisa. She had just pulled out the sword, and Janice was applying pressure to the wound. Both were covered in blood. Janice suddenly looked up at Stavius and shouted, Someone run and fetch a stretcher! Hurry!
Stavius dropped the club and said to the guard standing in front of him, "We can save your general, but we have to hurry. Get a stretcher and two of your strongest and fastest men."
The king was still ranting in the distance, but three guards appeared carrying a stretcher, and Stavius directed them toward their general. "Gently put him on the stretcher and quickly follow us. The rest of you help your fallen comrades," he commanded. The group followed the six heroes carrying their mortally wounded general and set it on the ground where Terra instructed. None of them could see Stavius's magic spring, and they could not believe that these six strangers thought they could somehow heal their fallen leader. Janus grabbed the general's body armor and pulled once they were in the spring. His magical abilities caused the heavy outfit to shred like tissue paper before dissolving into smoke. The village spectators stepped back in amazement. Most had heard of magic like this, but few had ever seen it. Terra, Janus, and Elisa were all capable of healing magic, but there was only a trickle of magical energy flowing into the spring, and it was soon depleted. Janus sat back and said, "We've stabilized him, but there isn't enough energy here for us to save him." Elisa agreed, "Even if there was enough energy, though, none of us are powerful enough to save him. We can keep him alive for another hour at most." General Jeremy looked up at her and whispered, "Thank you for trying. I will have died in battle and spent my last minutes witnessing a miracle. What more can a soldier desire?" Then he turned to Narayana and added, "Feel no shame or guilt for your part in this. You fought fiercely and honorably. You truly are one of the prophecy heroes." "No," shouted Terra, "this is unacceptable. Stavius, reach deep and bring forth the magic." Stavius had worked for nearly 2 weeks to draw a small trickle of energy to the surface. There was no way he could get his friends the amount they required in the next hour, but he wasn't going to quit without trying. He closed his eyes and thrust his arms toward the ground. He fell to his knees as he strove to reach deeper and deeper into the planet. He imagined feeling the willowy wisps of magic brushing against his virtual arms as they sunk down. Stavius reached out with his mind and tried to see the magic beneath him. He worked with far greater effort and urgency than he had ever used before, and a vision exploded in his mind. He could suddenly see a vast network of magic veins crisscrossing beneath him. Stavin had once heard a woman suggest that we never saw the gods because they were not entities, but rather the planetary bodies which bore their names. Mirth was Terra, while Mars, Venus, and Luna were the other three gods. She had theorized that magic was the lifeblood of the gods and that it coursed through the veins and arteries of the planet, nurturing its life. Stavin never thought this was more than a fanciful description, but others in the community were offended by her suggestion. The poor woman was severely punished for what she said and never spoke those thoughts aloud again. Today, however, Stavius suspected she was right. He could see a steady supply of magic flowing along an artery not far to one side of his little pool.
Stavius redoubled his efforts to tap into the artery he found, but it was too deep below ground. He just couldn't reach it. Besides, he felt as though he had been struggling for far more than an hour. Not only could the boy not reach the flow, he knew it was too late. Stavius felt a hand on his shoulder and started to give up until he heard Versera's voice softly whisper in his ear,
"Relax and clear your mind. You can do this if you let go of your stress and release your tension."
The very idea of relaxing and letting go of his stress while he was under a deadline to save someone's life seemed ludicrous to Stavius. He felt his desperation momentarily disappeared as he laughed at Versera's crazy suggestion. His virtual fingers bridged the distance to the magical artery, and a blast of magical plasma raced along his arms from the bowels of Mirth to the surface. Stavius fell back in exhaustion and amazement as he saw a geyser of magical energy burst from the ground. The villagers couldn't see it, of course, but they were suddenly awash with more pure magical energy than they had ever experienced in their lives. Janus, Terra, and Elisa pounced back on the general with renewed vigor for a few minutes until Elisa sat back and said, "It isn't going to work." "I'm sorry I took so long. I went as fast as I could," moaned Stavius. "What are you talking about?" asked Narayana. "It only took you a minute or two to bring up the energy." Stavius couldn't believe her words. The problem is that we can't absorb the energy fast enough to build our magical abilities sufficiently, panted Alisa. It would take us hours, if not days, to become strong enough. Janice locked eyes with Stavius and said, No, Stavius and I have done this before, but it's going to hurt. Alisa said, I'm in. Just do whatever it is, but do it quickly. The general doesn't have much time. Stavius knelt beside his two friends and placed his hands on their backs. The last time I did this, the procedure scorched Juice's skin, so I'm going to try to go slow, he explained as he began to transfer energy from the pool to Janice and Alisa. Ow! Screamed Alisa, before saying, It burns, but keep it coming. She and Janice went back to work on the general, who groaned as they operated. Keep him alive while I repair the damage, Janice instructed Alisa. I'm doing my best, but I need more juice. Is that all you've got? Alisa complained. You can handle all I've got, laughed Stavius as he turned up the volume. Alisa screamed again and said, That's more like it. It hurts, but it feels good. Keep it flowing. 10 minutes later, Janice leaned back and said, That's it. Take him off life support, Alisa, and let's see if we did it. Alisa slowly leaned back, and Stavius stopped the magic flow. Nothing happened for a minute or two until General Jarmy suddenly grabbed his abdomen and sat up. Great gods, that felt like y'all were reaching inside me and yanking on my innards, General Jarmy shrieked. Then he stood up and stared at his belly. Nary a scratch, he yelled. What kind of devilry is this? The kind for which you are thankful, laughed Narayana. That I am, agreed General Jarmy. Y'all have earned my respect and I owe ye my life. I am eternally grateful. Then he turned toward the guards and said, Arrest these six and take them to the purification cell. Not again, groaned Narayana.